Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome back to the second hour of Amplify, where our guest this evening is James Day. He's the author of a book titled St. Michael the Archangel. So far, we've been talking about the primary functions as he has in the book in the life of faith are to do battle against Satan and his minions, to defend the faithful from Satan's temptations and clutches, including a death, and to be the protector of God's people. And in the traditions of the Near East, he's considered to be a healer, both of physical healing and the stress caused by worldly demands. Tell us a little bit about the meaning of the 12th chapter of the book of Revelation.
Well, that's where we really get to know Michael's honor and attributes, and it's really through understanding and reflecting on that 12th chapter, which I'll just mention is, you know, we would know it by there was a war that broke out in heaven, right, dot, 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 and, you know, from there it tells us about the dragon and about Michael. What's interesting to me when I was working on this, and I never thought about it before, and actually, Father Ron, I'd like to hear, you know, see what you please weigh in here, is, you know, is this the war in heaven that took place between Michael and Lucifer at the beginning of time that sent Lucifer down into hell? Or is this the end times battle that wherein the Antichrist emerges and things are the apocalypse essentially? Is, you know, which battle are we working with here in Revelation 12? Because it is a bit it's a bit vague to me.
Yeah, my belief is that it's the apocalypse, that it is the final battle before the final judgment. So that's the way I've looked at it during the course of my life. I'm not a scripture scholar, don't mean to say that, but that's the way I've always read the Revelation, Book of Revelation, chapter 12.
And if I can add, what really made me think about that was because Daniel, going back to the Old Testament, Daniel 12 is almost a mirror of Revelation 12, because Daniel 12 also mentions Michael. And there's this interplay. And Daniel has one of the most references to Michael in the Old Testament, really in all of Scripture. So it's really interesting that both chapters, you know, in those books have Michael. So in a way, it is maybe perhaps a bookend, you know, where the Old Testament is the beginning. Mm-hmm. And yes. Revelation is the end, and we can expect Michael to be doing battle all the way up until that second coming.
Why is it that you selected Michael was the protector of France and I said my history was not good. I could not remember King Clovis the First, who was only 15 when he succeeded his father as king. But Charlemagne, you indicated, possessed an acute awareness of Michael's importance in the cosmic struggle against Satan. We can wonder how Michael influenced him. And many centuries later, we know that Michael influenced St. Joan of Arc. He didn't even abandon her when she was in prison, is what you write.
That's right. And I didn't want this to be dismissed. I didn't want to overlook how important Michael was to France, to Catholic France.
Yes.
And actually, this is where a lot of the Shroud of Turin research, so I did a lot of research on the Shroud. I put it aside to work on the Michael book, but I didn't put aside how important Christian history is to the life, to tradition, to people really, really rooted themselves in Christian tradition. In other words, there would be no France as we know it today without its Catholicism. Mm. And Michael is at the heart of all of those major events throughout Christian/French history, if you will. Kind of, there's elements where I talk about other countries and the East and that sort of thing, but really France, and of course Italy and Rome, but really France has this major connection with Michael. I mean, he is one of their patrons, as Joan of Arc would be added later. And both of them fought really together. Michael, through influence of his vision, of his voices, which is kind of interesting. One can get psychological with what was going on with this young Joan of Arc at the time. But it is not to be denied that she saved France from English rule. I mean, Paris was under English control at this time. And I had to go back to the beginning, because Michael was there from the time King Clovis, who was not Christian, unified the tribes of Franks and to really mm-hmm. become what we know as France. The Clovis is really beloved in France to this day. And it was his wife, Clotilde, who actually became a saint and was baptized by Remigius, who also is the bishop, is also a saint. And it was really on Michael's day in which Clovis really had his conversion, because it was a successful battle. So in a way, because of the battles of France throughout history, Michael's role as fighter, as soldier, as a military figure really really united France throughout history.
And there once, as you point out, there was a military order of Saint Michael in France that was abolished in 1790, temporarily restored in the 19th century, but has disappeared like so much of the France's Catholic past. Now, you took me on a journey at this point in your book. And again, the title is St. Michael the Archangel. We're talking with James Day. The Sword of St. Michael. When I saw that chapter heading, I thought, oh, what are we going to talk about? The sword, which is one of the ways in which Michael is pictured in his fight with the dragon, in his fight with Lucifer. Tell us about the Sword of St. Michael. It is a geographic line, you indicate, stretching from the windswept Isles of Ireland to the Holy Land of Israel.
Yeah, so just when you thought you had enough history with Michael in France,
yes.
here he expands his horizons, and it is really remarkable. The Sword of St. Michael is a phrase used to describe a series of shrines and monasteries that are named for St. Michael, simply put. But there's much more to it, and it's helpful. If you look this up, you'll see a map of what we're discussing to really understand. It's one access point, one line, one straight line on the map that runs from Ireland all the way down to Israel. And there's St. Michael's shrines are all on the same point. This is not something that was planned, but at the same time, you have to turn things over to the hands of Providence sometimes. And so, you look at what does this mean? So, you take Skellig Michael in Ireland you take St. Michael's Mound in England, and of course a lot of us are familiar with Mont Saint Michel in France. These are the first three in the sort of St. Michael, these shrines dedicated to St. Michael throughout history, and which all end up on this line. But the line extends without wavering through France to Sacre di San Michel in Turin, through Italy to Mount Gargano on the Adriatic side, continues through Greece, and again culminating in Israel with, it's not so much a St. Michael shrine as it is a general sort of a shrine for many. It's a Carmelite shrine, but we can identify Michael as being part of it. It's where the line culminates. So his presence, his devotion is dominant through Europe, but it's all on this same access point,
right. Which
is truly fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I was going to use the same word that was very fascinating to me. And you write the shrines and monasteries along this sort of St. Michael may have been locations originally for pagan purposes, but they transformed into holy places for the Most High. In honoring St. Michael, the angel so loyal to the Holy Trinity, these sanctuaries testify that the God of Jesus Christ is the one true God. And then just jumping around a little bit here, St. Michael links them all and directs them toward the heavenly Jerusalem. Each of these sanctuaries testifies to the endurance of the faith in season and out of season. When seen with the eyes of faith, the past is no longer remote and irrelevant. How can we not be inspired by the ambition of our ancestors in faith to honor the living God? Our journey along this sword of St. Michael instills a renewed sense of pilgrimage. And then you close by saying, perhaps we might begin to look at ourselves as pilgrims first and then tourists. Doing so might just increase our own connection to our spiritual past while instilling a new sense of responsibility in preserving these sites of faith for the future. So in their own way, they are very important.
They are. Thank you. Wonderful to hear you read. It's very calming, and so thank you. And I'm able to reflect with the audience as you read, with the listeners. It kind of gives me some new perspective on what we're talking about, this notion of pilgrimage. Yes, you know, you look at the shrine and say, oh, this could be a pilgrimage. You know, here's one stop, here's the second stop, here's the third stop. But again, it's not like it was not scripted, if you will. It just happened to be, and it was only really discovered, I believe, in the 60s. I mentioned it in the book. A fellow named Amendola sort of figured out that, wait a minute, there's this access that stretches and stretches, and they're all St. Michael's shrines. So it's not something that's been around, but the shrines have, and the devotion has. And so I really hope that we can start to see ourselves as pilgrims first beyond tourists. Europe remains a great a beloved destination place, and the cathedrals and other elements of our faith are always places on which people stop. And I think we have an opportunity here, if we look at this sort of St. Michael, to see an opening in reconnecting with our faith and reconnecting as pilgrims. Skellig Michael, that first shrine, for instance, up in Ireland, was used as a location in one of the more recent Star Wars films. So that really drew attention to it in a way that maybe it wouldn't have otherwise. So I'm hopeful we have an opportunity. We just need to rethink of who we have to ask ourselves, are we Catholic first and foremost? And from there, we can really change the world.
And relying on memory, and that's not always as good for me today, but aren't they built right in a line, the line of the sun, with the way the sun travels? And so it's almost like there's some something very supernatural about this in terms of they were following this line of the sun.
Exactly, and I think we can take that element that, so these shrines were from the people who, depending on where they were geographically, they said they were honoring the sun. These were pagan tribes, for lack of a better word. But they were fulfilled in Michael. They were fulfilled in devotion to Michael. Ultimately, they were fulfilled in devotion to who Michael served, which is Christ, you know, the triune God. And I quoted Pope Benedict from his book, Jesus of Nazareth, who acknowledged the shadowy guises in pagan religions. They were on the right track towards acknowledging God, towards acknowledging Christ. They didn't have the revelation, you know. So here we have an example, physical example of that fulfillment of what was once pagan has now been reborn, remade in the vision of Christ, in the vision of God through Michael.
And you talk about St. Michael in the 19th century, and you write, Christianity became something to suppress and replace in the post-Enlightenment period. Marxism, communism, socialism, Masonry, positivism, liberalism, modernism, and relativism all contended as attractive alternatives to the one true Catholic faith. And they're movements that are still alive today, aren't they?
Absolutely. That was one of those striking kind of connections, veiled connections to today's mentality that we're seeing. And you know, when I was writing the book, this was before, it was written mostly in 2019, and 2020 was really the proofing and the preparation of printing and that sort of thing. So it predated a lot of the chaos that we've encountered in 2020, but yet it remains very timely because of what we're seeing. And I don't have to go into detail. I think we all know that. So it really shows Michael's relevance throughout time, and here he is yet again as a figure who we can look to for hope amid the chaos, when I think a lot of us are maybe wondering, where do I fit in, or what's going to happen with us, what is normal these days? So it's really an opportunity to look at things anew. Maybe we can look at it through the lens of Michael himself.
One of the fascinating spiritual experiences by one of our popes in the past, Pope Leo XIII, on October 13th, 1884, was a vision he had. We have a couple more minutes before we take our break. Tell us a little bit about that vision.
I'll just quickly mention that, this is October 13th, 1884. This was 33 years before the Fatima apparitions. And the story goes that at Mass, at the foot of the altar, he experienced a trance in which he heard both the voices of our Lord, both the voices of Satan, kind of saying, how much can I get away with? And basically God saying, Christ saying, go for it, you know, do what you can. Out of this kind of harrowing experience, Leo went back to his study and came up with the prayer to St. Michael that we all know and love to this day.
Right, and his expression was one of horror and awe, and the color and look on his face changing rapidly, and I'm reading from your book, something unusual and grave was happening to him. At the age of 74, he fell into a trance-like state at the foot of the altar, frozen, unmoving, his face terrified, and as you said, what resulted that day was the composition of the prayer to St. Michael, but the invocation was given so much importance that it was among the rare non-liturgical elements added to the Mass, considered to be kind of sacred and wouldn't be touched. But the question is asked, what is it that transfixed Leo at the foot of the altar? And there's a popular story you write about around this that described the Pope hearing two voices, one guttural and one gentle, emanate from the tabernacle area, which he deemed to be the voices of Satan and one of the Lord. And the guttural voice, the voice of Satan, boasting, said, I can destroy your church. And the general voice, you can then go ahead and do so. Satan, to do so, I need more time and power. How much time? How much power? Satan says 75 to 100 years and greater power over those who will give themselves over to my service. And our Lord says, you have the time you will have the power, do with them what you will. And then you write, well, it may be interesting to try to calculate the time frame granted to Satan for his feckless goal, or to debate the authenticity of the exchange. Leo's immense contribution resulted in devotion to Saint Michael. Stay there, James. We're going to take our last break. Welcome back to the final segment of Amplify with our guest James Day, talking about his book, Saint Michael the Archangel. We may have been giving you the image of the warrior, the protector that Saint Michael is, but there is still another image, and it is as an angel of peace. And James writes in his book, while images of Michael invoke war and combat, his presence reflects the peace of God. We've seen how he remains a steadfast intercessor despite whatever tribulation threatens to overwhelm the life of faith at any given time. Though Saint Michael is undeniably associated with themes of spiritual combat and warfare, his service to the Trinity makes him an icon of peace. Tell us a little bit about that icon of peace with regard to the two great world wars, the Third Secret of Fatima, for example, and however else you would like to present him that way.
Sure. Well, thank you. You know, I was thinking during the break, we were talking about the image, that the famous iconic image of Michael suppressing the dragon. That was great, the dragon slash Lucifer, because it is they are almost, you know, essentially one and the same. And I was thinking, it's almost as if Michael is offering Lucifer there a second chance, because he's not there to put the final sword into Lucifer. Lucifer lives on as the angelic being of the netherworld. So but he's given perhaps he's given a chance at a kind of redemption, at a penance. But anyway, and so it's something to think about, but I think it does reflect on the angel of peace motif. And in the 20th century, where we saw resurgence in the 19th century, in the 20th century, it's a real fulfillment that Michael is here, and he is here with us. And I'll just say, oftentimes we're curious, is Michael the angel with the flaming sword in the Fatima apparitions? And it's not precisely said. We don't know. And so I didn't want to go as far as to claim that he is. And in fact, I excised one chapter, or one segment on the history of when I was researching whether he was really involved in the Fatima apparitions. You look at the history of Portugal, and there is this angel of Portugal who continuously appears throughout the history of Christian Portugal. And I really wanted to make that connection as being Saint Michael, but I refrained because of lack of concreteness. But it is very interesting that it, in all probability, it probably is. But it also occurred during the First World War, as you mentioned. And there is just so much there that Michael was involved in a war that truly Europe, and especially France, lost its soul. A generation of men were annihilated by the Great War. And the Great War occurred in places throughout France that were historically Catholic. And in many ways, undoubtedly, battles occurred, the churches demolished that were named for St. Michael. So it really is a tragedy. I did want to touch quickly, because there is so much to during World War II, the 82nd Airborne Division, part of the great defense or rally to save France and turn the tide against the Axis, the jump into Normandy, again, another part where Mont-Saint-Michel is located. But the 82nd Airborne Division of the U.S. Army has an event called the St. Michael's Day Jump, which occurs on May 8th. Mm-hmm. And May 8th is one of St. Michael's feast days. It's the one of the apparitions of Mount Gargano. But the point is that the St. Michael's Day Jump is still held today. Chaplains come in and they instruct those who are going to jump on St. Michael, And so you have this blend between the secular and the sacred in a real beautiful way.
And someone for whom you have great respect, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who was Pope Benedict XVI, postulated his theological commentary on the third secret of Fatima when he wrote that the angel with the flaming sword on the left of the Mother of God recalls similar images in the book of Revelation. This represents the threat of judgment which looms over the world. Today, the prospect that the world might be reduced to ashes by a sea of fire no longer seems pure fantasy. Man himself, with his inventions, has forged the flaming sword.
That's Colonel Ratzinger. Yeah.
So insightful, isn't it?
It's powerful. Yes, it's powerful and insightful, and it shows, well, first off, how indebted we are to the theology and how Pope Benedict / Cardinal Ratzinger can articulate these complex themes and how he can articulate and verbalize something that was entirely visual, which was the apparitions of Fatima. And I just wanted to point out about that. I mentioned when we were discussing Pope Leo's experience with the trance that ultimately ended up in the composition of the Prayer to St. Michael. It was the same day, 33 years apart. So, you know, which was October 13th, 1884, October 13th, 1917, the culmination of the Fatima events with the miracle of the sun. So one can say, well, was the 75 to 100 years that Satan asked for in Pope Leo's vision, when did that start? When did it end? Mm-hmm. And that's where I say you trivialize that. It doesn't matter when. It could be going on now. The point is we are given these tools that the faith has given us in very dramatic ways to combat evil.
And there is a sense in which Revelation, quote-unquote, continues to unravel as we attempt to understand through the events of history, even today, what's going on and what happens and the response to it, to see that God is at work in the midst of everything, and there's something to learn. At any time there is a supernatural event that takes place in the midst of evil. One was that, as you put on your book, that many miraculous events happened on the same month and the same day. And it's hard to say that that was by coincidence.
Exactly. Exactly. So there are events throughout history that all connect to St. Michael. It reminds me of the shrines of the Sword of St. Michael, which there's a connection that ultimately emerges, but it wasn't planned. And I think it's remarkable. This is where, if I can say, the church calendar has been lost, and I really wish we can reorient our lives around the beauty of the church calendar and which feasts are being celebrated, and we can really identify with our ancestors in the faith that way, and it's a way to go forward, a way to teach our future generations about it. But it just shows this remarkable supernatural breadcrumbs that are being dropped, wake up calls, if you will, that continually show up throughout history to say, to really make us think about the true presence of angels, the true presence of God in our lives, and what we can do with that knowledge, the opportunities we have to convert those around us.
And if we truly believe that the battle continues in the heavens, then there's something to be learned from that, from the, as we talked about, the sacred events in life that still continue. And as you pointed out, for many centuries, September 29th was devoted solely to Michael. And that changed, right? Now it's the three archangels that we believe exist. In the Byzantine Church, he is honored on November the 8th, as I recall.
Eighth. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. And then May 8th was also the day to St. Michael, the celebrating the presence, the apparition of Michael at the Mount Gargano, which is one of the shrines of St. Michael, detailed in the book. It's the second one in Italy. So look at suddenly you have, which we know is September 29th, where Michael is packed in, and I don't want to criticize the current church calendar at all, but suddenly you have a whole vast array of dates, of feast days celebrated around Michael that have been condensed into September 29th. And when, as you know, Father Ron, when saints are given multiple feast days, that's a pretty important, pretty good sign of their importance. And I think of the Blessed Mother who has so many of those herself. So that's something that we can't dismiss, that Michael is venerated in through the church calendars with all these feast days.
There was at least someone who, in trying to answer that question, that's certainly not the position of the church at this point, so I don't mean to say anything differently, but that there is only one archangel in terms of Saint Michael is also the other two that we honor on that day. And it's just that they're presented in the role that they had, that it's one. What? Why open that up, right? Except that you had said we're still living with mystery. Saint Michael in the Mass. He has an exalted place in the Mass, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Especially, we can understand that through the extraordinary form of the Mass. And I want to take specifically the Confiteor, the I Confess, because in the Latin Mass, Michael is evoked twice. And he's evoked very high up in the hierarchy, right up there with the Blessed Mother. So that's just one example. He returns when at a high Mass, when the priest incenses the altar right before the canon for the consecration. When the priest rounds the altar, which is still done today, but in the Latin Mass, Michael is specifically evoked as the angel to bring that incense up to heaven, to bring our prayers, to bring this offering up to the Father. So that's something we can think about when that occurs, when we're at Mass today, when the priest is doing that. We can think of Michael and Michael specifically as being at the right hand of the altar. Also, he's known as one of his names as the saint, the protector of the Blessed Sacrament.
Right.
Which makes sense. You know, when you think about his duty, his honor to God, he is going to defend God in every aspect. So, of course, he's going to be right there for every Mass when the Eucharist is manifested, the Eucharistic Lord.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about Saint Michael and death. Again, the title of your book is Saint Michael the Archangel. You write, in Jewish eschatology, Michael is the guide of souls in death. He is the one who will sound the trumpet for the dead to rise. This belief continues into Christian tradition. As through one's life, Saint Michael's role at the hour of death is also associated with safeguarding and protection. These last moments of earthly life offer one final opportunity for Satan to unleash an attack, the last chance to bring souls to the netherworld. Tell us a little bit about Saint Michael and death.
Well, I certainly wanted to include how important Saint Michael was in death. It occurs at the, it's kind of culminates the whole book, and because it shows how Christian thought is so well thought out. It, of course, Michael is going to be involved at the end of one's life, because in a way, one is experiencing the last things at that moment. So even if it isn't the ultimate, the final judgment, it still is the end of one's life. So of course, Michael is going to be hovering around, protecting, doing battle, because it is the last gasp, as you said, it's the last moment Satan can snatch a soul from into his clutches. And so Michael will be there. It, ultimately, as you said earlier, it's free will, though. The person has a choice up until the end. Do you want to serve God, or do you not want to serve God and serve thyself? And what we see in the battle between Michael and Lucifer is the battle of who we are as human beings throughout life. Do we serve God? Do we serve our pride? Do we serve, in a way, do we serve Lucifer? And I think that kind of, that culminates, that we have that dramatic conclusion at death. So it's really an exciting thing to think about. You know, we have a choice to make up until the end, and Michael will be there to help us, as we see in these writings and these beliefs in Christian thought.
And you point out that St. Alphonsus and other saints have expounded on St. Michael as the guardian of purgatory, one who will remain in his role as protector of souls as the righteous are purified to meet the eternal light of the Holy Face.
Yes, the Holy Face, that's one of the images I wanted to include. I'm very grateful to our Sunday visitor because we have images in the book, and the first image I chose is the archangels, as if they are Veronica in Veronica's veil, you know, Veronica clutching the cloth. Here in this particular image are the three archangels clutching the Holy Face. It puts a face to God, as Pope Benedict so beautifully talks about. God has a face in Christ, and I think it's very important to remember that Michael knows this face. Michael does not serve an ethereal God from before time began. Michael serves the triune God. Michael serves the Holy Face of Jesus Christ.
And the end times, you have this quote from citation from, we were talking earlier, this one's from Deuteronomy 12:1-3. At that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who is charge of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never has been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of a firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness, like the stars, forever and ever. Our guest this evening has been James Day. We've been talking about his book, St. Michael the Archangel. Favorite topic, and Michael, I hope you'll come back whenever you finish that next book on the Shroud of Turin, another area that I'm fascinated by, because I think there's a lot we can learn from that shroud, especially with the modern technology that's available to us today to prove what is true and what is not true. And I believe there's so much to be proven to be true. So thank you very much. Blessings to you and your family. And thank you for spending the time with us this evening.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Father Ron. Thank you, and God bless you.
All right, you too. Good night. So there's a little bit about St. Michael, the archangel, and towards the end of the book, James writes about Saint Michael and you, and he writes, Saint Michael has emerged as a powerful intercessor for guidance and protection, taking our prayers and petitions to the merciful throne of Almighty God. We can be sure of this especially when we are struggling in the heat of spiritual battle, surrounded by temptations and the snares of the devil. We are challenged to overcome the allure of the worship of graven images and idols in place of God. Relativism excuses any kind of behavior under the banner of one's personal truth. In this way, one's ego may become one's God. St. Michael challenges us to better understand our faith's history. We are part of a rich tradition, and we yearn for Michael to once again bend our culture toward the light of faith. Michael's fearlessness to confront evil is a challenge for us to cultivate an interior life and to discern spirits, to determine what is of God and what is not. From the obscure depths of the ninth choir of angels, Michael dramatically triumphed in the war of heaven to become God's fearless angel. It is in Michael's great moment of victory that he challenges us once more. Each and every day of our lives presents challenges of its own. We must actively promote the triumph of humility, to find sanctity in the rejected, and to give hope to the forgotten and the abandoned. In effect, to serve God as Michael did, so that the last will be first and the first last. Don't forget then how precious life is and how powerful love is. Tell someone now that you love him or her. Pray for peace as if it depended on you alone, and come back next Sunday and amplify with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Black Friday deals are going on all month long. Save up to 45% site-wide, plus a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.